What's the outlook for Australian property for the rest of 2021 and beyond? Now, that's a common question people are asking now that our real estate markets are experiencing the challenges of lockdowns. However, despite a sequence of, I don't know, it's been about 15 different state and territory lockdowns so far this year, property prices have remained largely unscathed. And even though the rate of house price growth is slowing, property values keep rising in almost every market around Australia, and our capital cities are in line for very strong double-digit price growth this year, more than anyone expected. Over the past year, Sydney's house prices have risen almost 20%. Melbourne around 12%. Brisbane values are around 18% higher than they were a year ago. Now, the momentum of growth, it's showing signs of easing. It peaked in March and growth is slowing, but is still occurring. And at the same time, vendors are now they're holding back putting their properties on the market for sale due to the uncertainty of the effects of lockdown. Remember, most buyers are sellers and sellers are buyers. So if they're wanting to put their properties on the market, they're not sure if potential buyers can have a look at their property or whether they can find the next property to purchase. But while COVID is slowing down our markets, the eventual easing in restrictions is likely to see activity rebound quickly again, and price growth is going to lift as the year finishes out and well into next year. So all this has done is put a delay on our property market growth. COVID isn't killing our property markets. It's slowing it down and delaying it. Recently, in fact, the ANZ Bank has updated its property price forecasts in response to the market's resilience, in face of all these extended lockdowns, and the ANZ Bank's joined all the other banks, and it believes house price growth is going to jump by 20% for this year. Well, we know certain markets and certain submarkets have done much better than that already. And the bank's upgraded its house price forecasts. It expects better despite the extended lockdowns across Victoria and New South Wales. And these higher forecasts are reflective of just the market's adjustments to lockdowns this time around. Buyers seem to have overcome concerns about remote auctions. Expats are coming back to Australia and they've joined investors who are now into the market, adding to property market demand. And in fact, these figures, these forecasts from all the banks are higher than the forecast they made 6 months ago. And boy, are they very different, a turnaround from the pessimistic forecasts all the banks made in the middle of last year. So what do you as an investor need to do to succeed in today's property markets? Today, I'd like to discuss with you a number of rules that are going to see you through. We're going to chat with 9 rules that you need to follow to succeed in today's property market with my business partner, Brett Warren. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropol, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
We're in new territory. Australia's property markets are going through an unprecedented period of growth. Boy, it's been an amazing year so far, and one that even the coronavirus pandemic can't dampen. But now lockdowns across the country are becoming more onerous as the latest Delta COVID strain is taking hold. It's pushing property markets higher, though, not dropping, considering the lockdowns, considering the restrictions there. In fact, house prices have grown the fastest they've had for probably about 17 years. And while they're slowing a little bit, they're not showing any signs of stopping. So what should one do as a property investor in today's market? Is there things we should be doing differently, or can we just keep doing the same? That's what I want to discuss today with Brett Warren, National Director of Metropol Properties. Welcome, Brett.
Hi, Michael. Good to be with you again.
Now, Brett, why? Why are house prices rising so fast?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Michael, and it is really a bit of a perfect storm at the moment, especially for house prices. There's low interest rates, which are set to continue in the short term. Housing supply is very, very low. I know around the country, it's probably down somewhere between 20 and 30% in our bigger capitals. And demand's just skyrocketing. Obviously, people aren't going away and spending money elsewhere and things like that. So as you probably know, it's cars, boats and homes at the moment, I believe, Michael. So
if you can find them, if you can get them, there's a shortage of all of those, isn't there?
There are. And now, obviously, investors are starting to come in and there's been government stimulus and things like that. So it's all kind of combined and it's obviously frustrating for first home buyers and people who are getting blocked out of the market as prices keep rising and that jumps up to the next level. And at the same time, the confusion's caused by the lockdowns and the lack of supplies, probably putting a lot of sellers off as well. And that's what I mentioned before about stock levels being down.
Sure. For every property coming on the market, there's 1.4 properties being sold. So the stock levels are depleting at the moment. But what are the rules for property investors and for home buyers? Some of them don't change. The fundamentals don't change. So while there's a lot of uncertainty clouding the market, when are we going to get out of these lockdowns, out of these coronavirus cocoons? Is it going to be when there's 70%, 80% vaccination? Is that going to be enough? There are still people wanting to get into the property market. There's people wanting to upgrade their homes, their lifestyles, and investors just wanting to take advantage of that. So, Brett, what I'd like to have a talk about are some of the fundamentals, some of the rules that don't change, and I think also how we can apply those into today's market, because there are some twists. Now, I know we often sort of jokingly say there are 25 million property experts in Australia, so everyone seems to have an opinion at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Everywhere you look, Facebook, Instagram, and even the family barbecues, it's a bit of a popular topic, Michael, and taxi drivers and hairdressers, which we always say is a sign of that as well.
Sorry, are you allowed to have barbecues? We're not in Melbourne. Yeah. We're not in Sydney. You're in Brisbane. You can get away with that. Well, let's have a look at some of the rules that our many decades of investing, and you've been an investor for decades and I have, and we deal with a lot of very successful investors. So we've found some things that don't change. And I think that first one really is that if you want to get out of the rat race, you need to invest for capital growth. Sure, cash flow is important. It's been shown over and over again that you need cash flow to stay in the game. So money management's important. But really, I believe it's capital growth you should be aiming at, Brett.
100%, Michael. And, I think we've talked before and written before that you can't save your way to wealth. It's the compounding and the leverage and the growth. And, you know, after all your expenses and things like that, your net yield may be less than 3%. But when you consider the capital growth you'll achieve from a really, really well-located property, the overall returns are really good, especially when you consider the low interest rate environment today. And this is the capital growth that is not taxed unless you sell your property and you're not paying, other taxes as well. And this enables you to reinvest your capital, take the money out, reinvest your capital with high compounding returns. You know, for people who are looking to chase cash flow, the rental income's tax and leaving a little bit left over to be reinvested at the end. And this means for investors in the asset accumulation stage of their journey, the more capital growth you achieve, the more wealth you're going to accumulate over the longer term. And we always say that as well, Michael, the right property for our clients are the one that gets them into their next property the fastest. And that's generally good appreciating assets.
Well, that makes sense. And over time, of course, as the asset appreciates, the rents will go up as well. But residential real estate is a high growth, relatively low yield investment. So don't try and make it something that it isn't. Having said that, in today's environment, yields are better than they have been for a long time just because holding costs are so low. Another rule that we talk about all the time is how demographics drive our market. Understanding how we live, how we want to live, where we want to live is going to be more important over the long term than the ups and downs of interest rates or the restrictions of COVID, the things that fluctuate backwards and forwards.
Absolutely. And look, it's those long-term fundamentals that we look at are generally demographics. It's not the short-term technical analysis and data. The demographics are going to drive our property market. You're really missing out on a key component if you're not looking at demographics, especially if you're looking to build longer term wealth and lower the risks. And understand demographics could and should be the final piece of the puzzle for you during the decision-making. It's certainly something we monitor very closely here at Metropolis. We understand that demographic changes were more important in the medium to longer term than the short-term effects, like you said, of an interest rate or a government change or incentive or things like that. So it's really important we look longer term.
We're looking for locations that are going to ride out a downturn and produce above average rates of return. In other words, it's not a judge of people, but we're looking for locations where people's incomes are higher. And the COVID lockdowns have really shown that the rich are getting richer. Knowledge workers, people who can sell their time based on the information they've got in their head. They can work anywhere. They can work remotely, and neighborhoods become less important, or location in the CBDs become less important to them. But they're really fussed about where they want to live. They're choosing the right neighborhoods. We've mentioned before that Australia's distribution of wealth isn't a bell-shaped curve with a few rich people at one end and a few poor people at the other end and lots of Australian middle class. The middle class are disappearing at the moment, and there is a stark divide between the rich and the poor. So I believe property investors should be actually looking for locations that are gentrifying, that are improving as these more wealthy people, and they're often the millennials, the younger generations now coming out, are wanting to move to, Brett.
Absolutely. You know, we see and we look for this a lot. We're kind of looking for those areas where, you know, the retirees are maybe moving out of the area. And like you said, that next generation is coming through. They're generally lower income earners that are moving out. Likewise, if we're finding maybe lower socioeconomic areas and government housing that may have been there decades ago are shifting out of the area. And those younger family are coming in with good incomes. And they're not wanting to live in those old tired places, Michael. So they're maybe knocking them over, or they're renovating to a substantial renovation and really getting that contemporary modern living and really changing the face of the suburb.
Well, gentrification comes from the word gentry, the more wealthy people. And again, while it's not a judge of people, the underlying premise of a gentrifying location is more affluent people are coming in, and you're going to notice that in different ways. Maybe we should have a quick talk about how you find that. What it means is people are interested in moving in these areas, and they're prepared to pay a premium to live there, to move to aspirational areas, to move to lifestyle locations. So how do you identify a gentrifying suburb?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of good approaches that you can do, and I think the easiest one is probably just have a drive around or a walk around the area you're looking to buy in.
So what do you look for?
Well, you'll know it when you see it, because you'll find that there's more people with money moving into the area. Like I said before, sometimes we see old houses being, you know, lifted up and renovated and changed, maybe vacant blocks that have been knocked over ready for a new house to be built. You can also start to look at, I guess, the cars are another good one. I think, was it John McGrath that talked about the Audi count in a certain area or a suburb? So, you know, they're kind of replacing we can't buy the old Fords and Holdens anymore, but those kinds of places. And then again, you're getting the gyms with the Pilates and the cafes with the cold press coffee and, you know, the delis and things like that as well that are really changing, breweries and cafes. And there's not just one of them, Michael. There's many, many, many.
Sure. I've also heard you can tell by the dogs. So they don't have the staffies anymore, but they have the miniature schnauzers or the cavoodles or things like that as well.
Absolutely.
So as we look at the demographics of an area, and we spend a lot of time, money and effort researching those, we have a look at the age group of people. Is it a younger population moving in, or is it older people? Are they more affluent, and what are their wages? And the census gives us this. Now, the census is 5 years old, but we've just had a census recently, so there'll be a whole lot of new information as well. And what are the educational qualifications of these residents? Are there a large number of people with tertiary educations? Are there more professionals? Because these tend to be the skill level 1 and 2 workers who have higher income, can afford to pay more. And it's not just owner-occupiers, because also tenants want to live there, not because they're a week or two away from broke, but because they aspire to live in those sort of locations. The good news is you don't have to get your timing right, because gentrification goes on over a number of decades. So I guess this all brings back to one of the other old rules, that location is important. We believe at Metropole that location does about 80% of the heavy lifting, doesn't it?
It certainly does. I always like to say, if you find a property, you can't change the location. If you don't like the wallpaper or the colour of the carpet or the kitchen, well, that's good news, because you can change it, but you just simply can't change where it's located. So, you know, find a location where there's really strong economic growth and employment hubs, which lead to big jobs growth and lead to the population growth will lead to demand for housing in those types of inner city locations and inner ring locations. And you'll find this will occur particularly in our eastern capital cities in Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne. That's where the majority of people are moving to, given the long-term trends. And the rich are getting richer, as you kind of said, Mike, and that's not a judge of person. But you've just got to look at the wages, and that's something we study quite a lot. We look for suburbs where wages are growing considerably faster and more than the state average, because people have those high-paid jobs, they have multiple streams of income, and they can go in and gentrify the suburbs and pay too much and get emotional and carried away and overcapitalise on their properties. and you should only buy in areas where the local demographic has higher income levels so they can afford to do this. And in a downturn, they've also got the ability to save through that. They've got buffers in place and things as well. Mm.
Sure. Well, we've identified four sorts of locations. There are the more affluent discretionary locations. These are more expensive suburbs of our capital cities. We sometimes call them the established money suburbs because people have lived in them for a long time. The residents have often paid off their mortgages a long time ago. They're the suburbs that didn't go down much in value during the COVID issues in 2020. People weren't worried about interest rate rises up or down. Think of Toorak, Brighton Q in Victoria, Tenerife or New Farm in Brisbane, Darling Point, Bellevue Hill in Sydney. Over the long term, this sector of the housing market, despite being more affluent, actually is reasonably volatile because during economic good times, people are prepared to pay a premium to get into those suburbs. But overall, the statistics go way back. They outperform the averages. They've always performed stronger because, again, unfortunately, the rich are getting richer and they just want to live there and there's a scarcity. Now, not everyone can afford those. So we talked about aspirational suburbs, gentrifying suburbs, and I think that's the next sort of suburb. This is, again, suburbs like Bentley or Elwood in Melbourne, Paddington, Mosman, Randwick, Newtown in Sydney, Camp Hill, Grange in Brisbane. But, Brett, I found there's actually a number of different types of aspirational suburbs. It's probably worth talking about. There are the lifestyle suburbs, people who actually wake up in the morning and they want to live there because of the cafes, because of the lifestyle. And sometimes it's because of water or beach. People are very much like the living near the water, don't they, in Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney?
Certainly. Yeah, absolutely, they do. And I think that's a good point to make as well, Michael. Sometimes the people want to rent there as well. Just because it's an aspirational suburb, they may not be able to afford to live there, but they can rent there as well and not have to pay the high costs.
Another sort of aspirational suburb, Brett, is school zones, and people pay a premium to live there, don't they?
Yeah, and we see that up here. I mean, the other week there was a $50,000 difference between one side of the road to the other just because of the school catchment, so certainly is.
Sure. And so, therefore, if you can't afford those more expensive, discretionary, high-end, old market suburbs, look for aspirational locations. And school zones is not just people wanting to buy there because we actually find that tenants want to live there as well. They want to get their kids in. And in Melbourne and in Brisbane in particular, we're building townhouses on those suburbs where families want to live. So you've got to have the right accommodation for the sort of people who want to live there, don't you?
Certainly do. Yeah, absolutely.
There's also tree change, green change, aspirational suburbs, people wanting to, now some of them wanting to move to regional Australia as well. But there's the knowledge centre aspirational suburbs around hospitals. Now, around universities used to be good. It's not working as well at the moment. But Brisbane was sort of a laggard in those areas before, but that's really changed over the last couple of years as well, hasn't it? There's no large knowledge centres in Brisbane.
It has. And you know, you can see that the local hospitals aren't just hospitals anymore. Like you said, they're knowledge centres. They've got, you know, much more, I guess, strings to the bow and different knowledge centres there to help people in universities and things as well.
So there's a number of different sorts of aspirational suburbs, and there's one more that I'd want to mention, and they're cultural aspirational suburbs. There are certain cultures. There's a lot of Asians who want to live in the same community, just like when my parents came to Australia. They came from Europe, and we didn't come from Greece or Italy, but the Greek communities lived in a particular suburb and pushed up the values, and the Italians did, and the Vietnamese have, and now it's the Asians. I mean, that's one of the beauties of Australia. We're a multicultural society, but I can think of Melbourne suburbs such as Box Hill and Glen Waverley and Mount Waverley, which have boomed because of cultural aspiration. People want to live there. There'd be similar suburbs in your hometown of Brisbane too.
There definitely is. All the nationalities, I guess, have sometimes the religious is very important too, Michael, the religious side of things. So they want to gather the churches or the mosques or the praying centres and things like that as well. And obviously there's some great places and suburbs where you can go and get the food and share the food with family. And it's fantastic.
Sure. So I guess this all comes down to what we were saying before about location. We've got to understand that location is going to do the heavy lifting. Now, underneath all that, we still are looking at the demographics and the sort of people who are moving into those locations and what their incomes are. Because in the future, when you want to live off your property portfolio, when you want to have that longest holiday of your life and enjoy off your income, rent affordability is going to be linked to the wages of the people that can live there. So that's something that people tend to forget, but that's an important rule that we always put in the mix when we look for properties, Brett.
Yeah, look, rule number four, it's the rent affordability being linked to wages. So I think that's one thing people don't really get a grasp and understand, that your tenant's ability to pay rent is going to dictate what's going to happen in your retirement. So obviously you want to get into those areas where, you know, the rent affordability is basically being able to be contained and people can pay more to rent the property in high demand areas, and rents will grow significantly faster because people can pay that premium to get into that location.
So I think we've got to remember that there's two types of tenants, some who have to rent because they can't afford to buy a house yet at their stage of their life, and others who choose to rent because they want to live in those aspirational suburbs. They want to live by the water. They want to live in the school zones. So they've made a decision not to or can't afford to buy there. Of course, many people are rentvestors and they actually rent their own investment property elsewhere. So choose a location where your tenant's rent is going to go up more than the average for the state. But that's one of the things you said a bit earlier on, Brett. That's one of the demographic things we look for. And another rule is we're actually looking for locations that are going to be in continuous strong demand by a number of different groups of people, not just one industry or one type of potential buyer or tenant.
No, and like you said, location is one thing, but buying the right property for the location and the type of property in that location is also very important. And investors should always look for a property that will be in continuous strong demand by owner-occupiers. The pandemic's changed the way we live and work and what we want from our property, so they need to understand that. And urbanisation has taken a step back in Australia. Australians are increasingly relocating to smaller city suburbs and villages. We've spoken at length about the 20-minute neighbourhood concept, Michael, before. Mm. You know, people want to work from home and that's going to probably become a bit more of the norm. So unsurprisingly, we're going to have densely populated, large high-rise apartment complexes, and they're failing or falling out of favour as well, with particularly home buyers and also investors. And we need to increasingly look for properties with more space and backyard and livability. And as we talked about before, the ability to self-isolate and be at home and be comfortable with ourselves.
Isn't that a change? Because in previous years, we talked about people trading their backyards for balconies and courtyards. We talked about trading space for place, being right near the CBD. But that has very much changed. Now, that doesn't mean apartments are bad investments, as long as they're family-friendly apartments, as long as they do have balconies. But people don't want to be locked in their coronavirus cocoon in high-rise apartments and sharing common facilities with other people. So we recognise that there are three types of places. The first place is your home. The second place is where you work. But the third place is actually where you recreate, where you go out, the restaurants, the bars, the gyms, the houses of worship, the barbershops, the places you frequent, and they've become more important. They've never been as important as this. So as you said, Brett, neighbourhood's important. And if you can walk, or if you can ride, or if you can just take a short trip to the shopping strip, to the coffee shops, to the amenities, to the beach, to a park, even during lockdown, this is important. But I believe once lockdown's over, the importance of neighbourhood, people won't forget these lessons for a long time.
No, absolutely. There's always these types of shock events every so often. So people want more choices. That, I guess that's what it comes down to, more livability, more choices where they live and the options around them as well.
Well, what we're working through at the moment is 9 rules of success in property investment to make sure that you take advantage of what's left of this property cycle. And there still is another year and a half or so of good growth. It won't be as strong as the first half of this cycle. So you've really got to follow these rules because the rising tide doesn't lift all ships. Well, it sort of does in the ocean, but the Titanic sank in a rising tide, Brett. So I guess you can't just count on the market doing the heavy lifting. So we're talking about the rules that you should be paying attention to as well. And one of the rules that we stick to very strictly at Metropol is, in general, avoiding new properties. Now, that's not 100% of the case because we've bought new townhouses in a number of states, based on the fact that they weren't part of a large complex, that they were built for owner-occupiers, they weren't built for investors. But a lot of the high-rise apartments built over the last 10, 15 years were really built for off-the-plan sales to, in general, overseas, and I guess some local naive investors. And boy, have people got themselves into trouble with those.
They have, you know, and you can drive a car out of the showroom and it loses 10 to 15%. And I'd probably argue that those types of properties have probably certainly lost a lot more than that, Michael, unfortunately. And I guess, like you said, there's nothing wrong with buying new, but we don't want to pay that premium. You don't want to be paying for, you know, shiny brochures and champagne sunsets and rental guarantees that you're actually paying for. All those kinds of things are coming home to roost. And you may get tax benefits and stamp duty concessions, but most of those are really to keep the builders afloat and you know, keep the construction wheels moving. They're really not to help you. A lot of people get sucked in by that.
Well, valuers recognise this. They know these costs are factored into the price. And on resale, you'd never recoup your contract price. A lot of people buy new apartments for the depreciation. And if you were to on-sell it, it's now no longer a new apartment, and so therefore investors won't get the benefit of that. So valuers almost always value the completed projects once they finish those off the plan projects and eventually they come to completion. You've got to put over your money. They value them considerably below the contract price. And if you don't believe all that, just go look at the quarterly gain and pain reports from CoreLogic. You can see, and our statistics dig much deeper into it than that when we do our research at Metropole, new complexes, they've had minimal capital growth for over a decade. You've given your money to the developer and it's not his to have.
No, it's like you said, it's like giving the first 2-3 years capital growth away to the other side when that's something that you could be using effectively and, you know, moving forward.
Well, in fact, I think it's even more than that, Brett. It's often up to a decade. Now, another rule that's important is money management and finance. So I know a lot of people come to us at Metropole and say, can you please help me? I want to buy a property. I want to pay the school fees. I want to buy a property. I want to send my kids to a good school. Or I want to go overseas on holidays when they could in the past. And they haven't got good money management and they hope that all of a sudden the property is going to give them money. Real estate doesn't work that way. We believe that part of the holistic approach that we present to our clients is having a financial plan, and part of that is having a buffer, because a buffer actually allows them not just to buy property, but it allows them to buy time to ride through the ups and downs. I don't think there was any client of Metropole's over the last couple of years through these difficult times who's had to sell up because they didn't have the cash flow to see them through.
No, not in my memory, no, certainly not. You know, I think it's a really underrated tool, a really good risk management tool. And I think importantly, as you said, it's buying time as well. You know, those financial buffers, I think it's a dangerous time, Michael, at the moment, because obviously interest rates are fairly low and people may have their buffers a little bit lean thinking that this will go on forever, but it certainly won't. So it's really important that you actually do that on an annual basis when you're reviewing your portfolio. You review your buffer, you review your financial situation, and a cash buffer ensures you've got sufficient time to make the adjustments you need moving forward rather than selling your assets. It's too costly an exercise to get back out and get back in. So holding is really, really important. It reduces stress and anxiety and pressures because you know you've got that buffer there for a rainy day.
Sure. Now, how much buffer do you need? Well, it's really, really hard when you first start off, because when you first start off, you can't afford to have a year's financial buffer. You need those funds to be able to get into a good property. The trouble is, though, that as you buy a property, there's always unknowns, there's always expenses, little things go wrong, vacancy periods. So you've got to at least have a small buffer when you first start. And then as your portfolio gets bigger, we often suggest it's wise to hold somewhere between 6 and 12 months of living expenses, but put them in an offset account so that at least you get some benefit from that. But again, it's not our job in this podcast to give the listener specific advice because we don't know your circumstances, but that's part of the overall advice we give when we sit down with the clients at Metropole. We actually don't talk about property for the first couple of discussions, do we?
No, it's quite interesting, isn't it? I think a lot of people coming expecting that we will, but we always say that property is the outcome. We've got to get the process and the framework right first, and a buffer's certainly a key step in that.
Well, I know that I regularly, and we spoke about it only a couple of days ago, you get questions on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and they say, where should I buy a property, or should I buy it here, or should I buy it there? And that's the wrong way around. They start with the property rather than where they are now, where they want to head. So the property is the physical manifestation of a whole lot of decisions that have to be made long before you even start looking for a property. And that's why I know you and your team always start by putting a strategic plan together. It brings the future forward to today so you can plan to become the person you plan to become.
Definitely. Like we talked about, Michael, begin with the end in mind. I think a lot of people, and I see the mistake a lot of people make, is they buy any property. Properties will work. And then hopefully in, you know, 15 or 20 years, they've got enough money to create that asset base and passive income. But as we know, the majority, it doesn't happen. It doesn't work like that.
Sure. So the next rule is be careful who you listen to. Remember, like with anything, there's always going to be pessimists out there willing to give you their 2 cents worth of advice, and they're usually wrong. While the property pessimists and negative Nellies are going to tell you to avoid investing in property, there's always going to be other people, Brett, who tell you to buy property or tell you to buy a particular type of property or in a particular area.
I think that's what we were talking about before, Michael. When we sit down and we talk about the client's needs and their wants and their goals, we don't talk about the property. I think if you're sitting down in front of someone and they're talking about a property or a particular location or something you should be looking at, then there's probably a hidden agenda there and you're probably in the wrong room. These people are probably likely salespeople or project marketers who are probably not representing you. They're probably representing the developer or the constructor, whoever it may be. So I guess the truth is, Michael, that nobody knows what's happened next. And I think we can see that over the last 12 months, no one's been able to do that. So I think it's really more important that we get that right. And that's what we do at Metropole. We've got that longer term approach. We've got the experience. We've got decades and decades of experience and perspective. We've got that proven and trusted framework that we can help our clients to get it right for the longer term.
Now, that's really interesting when you say proven and trusted, because I know that the tax office not that long ago updated their statistics showing that there was just over 20,000 Australian, what they call taxable units. In other words, it could be family trusts, it could be people, it could be companies that own six or more properties. And the audited results of our clients showed that our clients were 7.3 times more likely to have six or more properties than average. Now, that's skewed by the fact that some of our clients are new and they've only got one or two because they've been with us for a while, but we've got a very large group of very high net worth clients who've got very substantial property portfolios. If you're interested in taking advantage of the next stage of the property cycle, just go to metropole.com.au, find out about our holistic approach, and just leave us your details. And I know, Brett, you'd be happy to have a chat with anyone who's interested in finding out what their options are.
Yeah, that'd be great. Obviously do that on a daily basis, and it's something I really enjoy.
I think one of the last rules I'd like to discuss is the concept of avoiding negativity. While there's always people going to give you advice, and as you said, Brett, the future is uncertain, and COVID and the continued lockdowns, look, they are taking the toll on us. We can see it amongst the people that we talk to, the people that we deal with. Closed borders are frustrating people. Despite that, property prices are going up. And as the saying goes, this too shall pass. We're in a property cycle. The good times are going to return. We now have a level of clarity. And the clarity is that when we get to a particular percentage of vaccination, whether it's 70, whether it's 80, life will get back to normal. So I think the decisions people make and the way they think during this period of uncertainty is going to set up the stage for how they're going to be once we're through all this.
Yeah, well said, Michael. I totally agree. And I think property's actually probably been a bit of a shining light in the 12 months for all of us, just the way that the market's moved and things like that. And it has been a positive in a very, very probably dark and unusual time.
Sure. So, yes, the pandemic's causing havoc. Confidence is falling. We're socially distancing. We've had to cancel events. We've closed borders. Even talk of a double dip recession. Look, the list goes on and on. And don't be scared if it doesn't look like there's good news out there. Don't panic, because, look, there's little doubt this is serious. But as I said, this will pass. And I believe the fundamentals and the sort of things that Brett and I were talking about so far are going to outweigh, they're going to be more important, they're going to outsmart the short-term thinking. And over the last year or two, Brett, the residential market, it really has shown us its resilience. So I see this Delta strain of COVID and the closing down, it's going to lock us up again like last year, but there's no reason that property values are going to drop.
No, I don't see that either, Michael. You know, people are always going to need somewhere to live, and homes really are a safe haven for them in the current environment. And it's always challenging to invest when everyone else is running around worrying about the end of the world. But as we all keep saying, you shouldn't make, you know, 20 or 30 year investment decisions based on the last 30 minutes of news or the latest Facebook headline. And in fact, there's precisely the conditions that present your best opportunities for investors who have a long-term plan. And there's that Warren Buffett quote about, you know, being fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. So now's a great time to get all your ducks in a row. Take advantage of the market and the opportunities that are opening up to take the next step.
Well, I think getting your ducks in a row is a really good way to finish this off, because basically, as we said, buying a property is not a strategy. Going out and researching is not a strategy. You've got to do all the strategic work in advance, including the planning, in getting an ownership structure strategy, getting a property strategy, understanding where you want to be in the future, getting a finance strategy in place. So I know when people come and see you and the team at Metropole, there's often a couple of months between when we first see them when they even start looking for a property and use our buyer's agents. And while that annoys and frustrates somebody, if you do it in the wrong sequence, you're likely to get into trouble.
That's right. You know, again, a good example is if we put it in the wrong name, or, you know, we buy the wrong area or wrong property, but that could be very, very costly in 20 or 30 years' time. So it's really important we make decisions strategically in the best interests of our clients and for their longer term goals.
So if you want to find out how you can take advantage of Brett and his team's knowledge, experience, guidance to see you safely through these more challenging times, go to metropole.com.au. Always fun having a chat, Brett. We'll speak again soon.
Absolutely, Michael. Thank you.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to talk about the three states of happiness. If we look closely, there are three ways to be happy. The first two are accessible in everyone's life, but the third one is rare. But the third one is the only one that stood the test of time for centuries. So the first way to be happy is to follow your impulses. Take life as it comes from moment to moment. Of course, this is the way of babies, of small children. They're motivated by the next thing that occurs to them. They've got little ability to predict what's going to turn out to be sad or glad, what's the right sort of experiences, the right things to do. This impulsiveness often lingers into many adults, but the vast majority of people move on to the second way of being. And the second way is to seek experiences that bring pleasure and minimize things that bring pain. Yet no matter how carefully you assess every situation, we often end up in relationships that have soured or things that once excited us become boring. Psychologists have discovered that people are generally bad at predicting what's going to make them happy. Now that's interesting, isn't it? But there's a third way to be happy, and this is the eternal way, and it's the independent of the first two. The third way is a state of being that requires a conscious effort. It happens when we make choices that include peacefulness over violence and anger, acceptance over tolerance of others, acting out of love, kindness and generosity. You enter this third realm of happiness by devoting your time to creative endeavors, by being of service, by being altruistic. You reach this third level of happiness by being independent of the good and bad opinions of others. It doesn't matter what they think. By not adding to your own stress or others' stresses around you. And by speaking and living your own truth. So recognizing that happiness is a state of awareness rather than a planned or a predictable outcome, that interestingly frees you from all attachments. As Deepak Chopra says, being in the state of awareness spontaneously puts you in the correct path in every situation. So, ironically, the third way actually completes the circle. Because you're following your impulses as they arise, just like a young child, and taking life as it comes, it's sort of completing the circle. The difference is you're choosing to be in that state of childish wonder rather than being reactive to it. Now, I read the poet William Blake called this state organized innocence. In Buddhism and other Eastern traditions, it's called choiceless awareness. Choiceless awareness allows you to arise above ego levels, you know, where you predict pleasure versus pain. It allows you to arise into a state where there's no dilemma, because every situation is meant for you. It's meant for you to enjoy an experience. According to ancient wisdom, there are many routes to this third way, including meditation, mindfulness, self-reflection. And without these practices, eternal happiness is a dream. So it's important to know this. You're not forced to choose between the first and second ways, knowing that they're not going to lead to lasting happiness. No matter how hard you try, that's actually opening things up to the third way. It helps it emerge. So your intention sets the path in motion and unfolds every step along the way. Now, that's interesting, because I can't think of a more important lesson of life that I can give you in today's session, because we all want to be happy, but many of us are not happy because of all the external things that are going on in this world. So drop the first way, just ceding to your impulses. Drop the second way, seeking out experiences, and start to pick up the third way by consciously behaving in certain ways that are going to give you the life that you deserve. As we work our way through the end of the year, through the challenges of lockdowns and economic turmoil, I'm going to be bringing you this podcast twice a week, and I hope you got some benefit from my discussion with Brett today. But if you'd like to catch up with me in between these podcasts, just chase me on social media, look for Michael Yardney, or join my private Facebook group, look for the Property Update private Facebook group, where every day I leave some tips, some tricks, some charts, something a bit different that I don't leave elsewhere. And if you want to increase your success library and learn some more ideas about property investment success and money, go to podcastbonus.com.au, podcastbonus.com.au, and I'd be happy to give you a bundle of reports and ebooks. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?